Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, April 23rd. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, welcoming Dr. Ramez Awad to the Saratoga Hospital Medical Group Ear and Sinus Surgery Practice, located in the Wilton campus, saratogahospital.org, for more information. Joining us this Medical Monday is Dr. Vincent Carcillo of Capital District Renal Physicians. He's here to discuss internal medicine and nephrology. He has an extensive background in these areas, is board certified in both. This promises, as always, when Vince is here, to be a fascinating program, therefore a busy one. So be sure to get your calls in early at 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. Your calls, much more, all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WNC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok, one of my favorite people in the whole world, and I mean it. Dr. Vincent Carcillo of Capital District Renal Physicians is here to discuss internal medicine and nephrology. He's board certified in both areas. Dr. Carcillo has been with the CDRP since 2004 and is the current president and managing partner of the practice. That is a big job. He's a graduate of the University of Scranton. He completed medical school at Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine. He trained in nephrology at Albert Einstein Medical Center in Philadelphia. His clinical interests include transplant, nephrology, and hypertension. Dr. Carcillo, welcome back to the Vox Pop.
Hi, Alan. Thanks again for having me. It's always so nice to be here.
And it's always nice for us. We know how busy you are, so it's extraordinary that you make the time for us, and we really appreciate it. So, when somebody has kidney problems these days, what's the first line of defense? What do you do?
I would say the first line of defense is actually finding out that you have a problem, and there are so many places to get screening. A lot of times at your primary care doctor's office, but there are a lot of screening tools that we have out there, even sometimes at libraries and churches. National Kidney Foundation does screenings to find out. Sometimes diseases like hypertension and diabetes, you might not know you have them until you look into it.
So how do you sort of test for it? What are the symptoms that people should be watching out for that even get them to go get screened?
These diseases can be tricky because sometimes they don't have any symptoms at all. An easy way to know that you're getting a good health screening is sometimes just a simple blood pressure reading. Sometimes you can do that yourself at your local pharmacy or grocery store. It's always good to get a good primary care done at your family doctor's office. But a simple urine test is another way to find out if you have kidney disease.
And what does the urine test show?
The urine test basically looks at, in a simple way, what is the kidney doing, right? So when we talk about what kidneys are doing, we talk about them as filters. And as they're filtering the blood, which is their job, one of the things that is a main responsibility is to be able to get rid of salt and water. So we know that this is what should be in the urine, salt and water. If there are other things getting through that filter,
like
things
protein.
Like protein or blood cells, well, that might not give you a diagnosis, but might put up a red flag and say, hey, there are things in this urine that we need to investigate.
A lot of people die of kidney disease, don't they?
Absolutely. It's in the top 10 causes of death in the U.S.
Right. Well, we'll go to Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania, our regular Jim, who always asks the first question. What do you got?
What long-term side effects are high blood pressure medications such as calcium channel blockers likely to have on the kidneys?
Okay. Would you ask the question again? We had a little bit of a foul up here. My fault. Go ahead.
Okay. What long-term side effects are high blood pressure medications such as calcium channel blockers likely to have on the kidneys?
Hi, Jim. Thanks so much for your question.
Is it too loud?
Hi.
Okay, turn it down. Turn the black button down. Jim, say 1, 2, 3, 4. Go ahead.
Or 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay, now we got it. Go ahead. Thanks for the help in the radio land.
Hi, Jim. All right, so I did get your question and about calcium channel blocker. So all medicines, I would just start by saying all medicines have their own baggage, right? And so no medicine is perfect. And calcium channel blockers certainly have side effects that can be associated with them. Some common ones include swelling in the ankles. There aren't anything specific that you need to worry about in terms of long-term damage to the kidneys, but sometimes blood pressure can be overtreated, and if blood pressure remains too low for too long, that can cause problems of its own.
What are they for, the calcium?
Calcium channel blockers are one of the medication classes that we use to treat high blood pressure.
I see. Now, high blood pressure... Let me ask you about high blood pressure. Thanks, Jim, by the way. High blood pressure is fascinating in that it can change. When I get up in the morning, I get here, I got to drive. It could be like 135. But in the afternoon, it's low. What's that about?
It's a great thing to kind of notice. And it's part of our physiology. Blood pressure does rise and fall during the day, sometimes just based on our hormonal cycles. Blood pressure tends to peak kind of in the early morning as cortisol levels peak in your body. But blood pressure can change with stress, with anxiety, physical stress. And you know, when you have to think about when you're moving around, when you're standing up from a seated position, your blood vessels have to be able to squeeze to maintain normal pressure so that you don't pass out.
Interesting. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We have a star with us today, folks. Vincent Carcillo and of the Capital District Renal Physicians. And so if you've got a question, ask it now, because right now you're going to get in, and in 10 minutes from now you're not. Let's go to Peter in Scotia. Peter, you're on.
Hello, hello, doctors. How are we doing today?
You honor me. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. I had a question, maybe a two-parter, if I can get away with it. I see on television all the time, advertisements for class action suits against Nexium and Prilosec. And I wonder if it's generally regarded as a safe drug. That's the first part of my question. And maybe we can go with that first.
Well, it'd be good to know your second part. Then we'll know how much time to give your first part. Go ahead.
Okay. It has to do with the first question today. I was taking a blood pressure medicine. I have kidney disease in the family. I was taking Valsartan, and one of the warnings on it was, I thought you can increase potassium in the blood, and it said there could be some kidney trouble with it if after long-term use. I believe that was Valsartan.
It's a great question. Series of questions, and I'll tell you, you know, I get up early in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock, and I turn on the television while I'm doing my morning stretches, and it always comes on. All the medicines come on, and they tell you at the end, almost as long as the whole ad, why not to take it? This can result in death, this and the other thing. So, you know, if you listen to that stuff, you're probably never taking a medicine.
Well, this isn't a warning for Nexium. I've seen it repeated.
No. We got your question.
All right.
Doctor.
Yeah. And so we're essentially navigating the culture that we live in, right? So we do. We see all these advertisements for medicines on TV, and at the same time, there are disclaimers on the medicine for 100 different reasons why maybe you shouldn't take the medicine.
And are each of those events, are each of those disclaimers based on a report from someone that they suffered as a result of taking the medicine?
Right. They do. When they're investigating these medications, they'll take just about any complaint and write it down. And so when you look at a product insert, for example, the list is as long as your arm in terms of the number of things. And almost every drug, someone reports a headache or someone reports, you know, diarrhea or something like that. And so whether that's going to happen to you or not may not be very likely, but someone experienced that, just so you know. And again, it's kind of the culture that we live in, because we'll see that commercial, and it'll be followed by the commercial like I think Peter is talking about, which is someone noticed a problem with the medication down the line, and now there's a lawsuit associated with it.
Yeah, I'm sure you docs have a great affection for lawyers.
Well, you know, it's something that we have to work with. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, the stuff with the proton pump inhibitors, which is sure. what the Nexium are, it was actually not a study to look for that. It was something that kind of information that became available from a different kind of study altogether. So it's certainly not perfect science, but it did look like there was an association between people who were taking those medicines and those people eventually developing chronic kidney disease. So something that needs to be looked into.
Which is interesting because it seems to me that about half the country, including me, has been on them for, you know, they were supposed to be just for a couple of months, and then people found out they couldn't get off of them. And they've been taking them for their whole lifetimes.
Absolutely. Such a common medicine. And there are other medicines out there like it that we generally consider safe. But again, you know, even over-the-counter medications can have side effects.
Like an 81 milligram aspirin, which I take every night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Aspirin, you know, aspirin decreases the ability of your platelets to work, which is why you take it. But in some people, well, maybe this causes them to bleed into their stomach or into their colon.
Okay, did we give Peter everything he was entitled to?
I think we did not address the valsartan question.
Go ahead.
So valsartan is a medicine that we use in people who have chronic kidney disease all the time, especially in people who might have high blood pressure and diabetes or a combination of those problems with some protein in their urine. Now, valsartan is in a class of medications called angiotensin receptor blockers, or ARBs. A lot of times people will refer to them. So this medicine class lowers blood pressure like all the other blood pressure medicines do. We talked about calcium channel blockers before. They all lower the pressure in your system. But this one has another effect in which even if it doesn't touch your blood pressure, well, it can still lower protein in the urine, which in many people can give them a protective effect for the kidneys. It needs to be done, obviously, in concert with a primary care physician, a cardiologist, a nephrologist, so that we're looking for things that can sometimes happen. If you use these medicines in a person with more advanced chronic kidney disease, well, maybe sometimes you do see a higher potassium level or a rise in creatinine, which would be a reason to stop the medicine.
We'll take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Adelphi University's Hudson Valley Center, offering flexible social work graduate degrees, including a part-time Master of Social Work program, combining on-campus and online coursework. adelphi.edu/MSW. Laura Brown of UMA Schenectady, formerly No Nonsense Therapeutic Massage, providing stress and chronic or acute pain therapy using an array of massage modalities, ume.amtamembers.com. Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region. Practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, actsurg.com. ACT Smart New York, Saratoga Springs, offering individualized outpatient counseling and Suboxone treatment for opioid use disorder and medical treatment for alcohol problems. ActSmartNewYork.com. And from Nathan Littauer Hospital, welcoming Dr. Jerome Rosenstein to their Gloversville location. Dr. Rosenstein has 25 years experience in obstetrics and gynecology, specializing in vaginal surgeries, cervical pathology, and high-risk obstetrics. NLH.org.
We're back. We're going to ask very quickly. We're going to go to two emails. Hi, Dr. Carcillo. Can you talk a bit about the risk of kidney health for overuse of over-the-counter analgesics, Tylenol, aspirin, and Motrin? Especially important since most people with chronic pain are using these on a regular basis.
I think that this is a really good question, and I think it lends itself to some of the conversation we were just having, which is that no medication is perfect, and some medications are widely available to us, even over the counter, but could have some negative consequences. the medications that the emailer had listed, things like Tylenol, ibuprofen, Motrin, those kind of medicines, and others, can have different side effects. Tylenol does not have so much of a chronic effect on kidney function, but ibuprofen and medicines like it, like brand names of Motrins and Advils, they can cause protein to show up in your urine. They can cause blood pressure to be higher, and they can cause chronic damage to the kidney over time, which you wouldn't necessarily expect in something that you could pick up at the grocery store.
Indeed. Okay, and here's another one. Good afternoon. Why is it that the signs of diabetes is frequent urination at night? Why only at night?
Well, I would break that question up. So frequent urination in general, yes, absolutely, especially in a person who maybe didn't know that they had diabetes, because if the blood sugars are elevated, that blood sugar eventually makes its way into the urine and causes what we call an osmotic diuresis. Diuresis just means you're peeing a lot. And so essentially, when your blood sugars are really high, you tend to pee a lot.
But is the report of only at night consistent? I mean, you know.
Yeah, that part may be off a little bit. So blood sugars can be high, and you could be urinating frequently in the morning or in the afternoon as well as at night. But nighttime frequent urination, sometimes, especially in a gentleman or an older gentleman especially, I think more about prostate issues.
What if you're not a gentleman? Okay, let's go to Betty in Albany. Sure. We've got a Betty in Albany. You're on, Betty.
Hello, it's Debbie, but thank you so much for the call.
Hey, that ain't my fault. It's the screener.
Go ahead. Welcome, Debbie.
Go ahead.
Hello, doctor. Thank you for your time. I've been diabetic for 15 years. Mother died of kidney failure, and I think hers was from uncontrolled high blood pressure. I recently had blood work. She said the kidneys are in distress. My A1Cs are never over 7. But with, you know, holiday eating and all that kind of stuff. But my main question is, I am on Avapro and Alodipine. And my doctor put his thumbprint in my legs, and it stayed there. And now he thinks that it could be a kidney problem. What do you think?
Well, so there are a number of things there, Debbie. Thanks for calling, because I think, you know, just having diabetes for as long as you've had it puts you at risk for having a form of chronic kidney disease, whether it be early or more advanced. People who have
it hereditary from the mother.
Yeah. So and you're I'm sorry to ask you, but how old are you now?
62, and my mother was thin. No weight problem.
Yeah. So you, as you know or may know, that there are a few different types of diabetes. One where the pancreas fails to make insulin altogether. We call that in general type 1 diabetes. I used to call that juvenile diabetes. And other forms of diabetes that happen more in older folks, especially more heavy folks, where the
type 2,
sure, where the pancreas is working, you're making insulin, it's just the tissues are not responsive to it. And I will tell you, it's more the type 1 diabetic that have a propensity towards kidney disease. There are just a lot fewer of them. So we have a lot more type 2 diabetics, and therefore a lot more patients with chronic kidney disease that have the type of diabetes that you have.
And the good news, of course, is that in the old days, when I was, you know, maybe 30 years younger, diabetics died. And with all the classes of medication, everything, we're doing much better now, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Doctor, the kidneys are under distress. You said less blood work. What does that mean? Am I on the way for chronic kidney?
Well, you may be. So I'm not sure what she meant by distress, but if you had blood work done and it showed that your kidney function is abnormal, or if it showed some protein in your
urine.
Kidney
function was normal. She just said starting to be in distress. I have had protein over the
Debbie,
years.
Hey, Debbie, you got to let the man finish his sentence. Go ahead.
Well, that protein thing scares me, but go ahead.
Yeah. So, and you're absolutely right. And so you have protein in your urine. You've had diabetes for a long time. I can't make a diagnosis for you, but I'll say this is something that we see in the office very commonly. And protein in the urine is usually an early sign of diabetic kidney disease. So this is something that you want to be on top of.
Thank you, Betty. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And we go directly to Maureen in Pottown, Poughkeepsie. All right, Maureen, you're on.
Hello. I was wondering, 15 years ago, I was told I had a dromedary hump on my kidney, and I was told there was no reason to worry about it. But is that something you ever need to check out again?
What is a dromedary hump, doctor?
This is one of the things that we sometimes talk about in the development of the kidney. Sometimes kidneys can be a little bit abnormal in terms of their anatomy. Sometimes they can even be joined, and we call that a horseshoe kidney, just because of the way the kidney's formed. Did you see a urologist for that?
Yes, I had to go. He just noticed it during an ultra scan, and then he did a CAT scan, and he said, "Oh, there's no problem, but I'd like to come see you like every 6 months." But I actually never went back. But why would I have to go back every 6 months?
Why would you have to go back if there was no problem?
Right.
Yeah, and that's it's a good question to ask, and it's a question that you hear from patients a lot. Sometimes there can be communication errors between doctors and patients. What I would tell you is this. That not having seen your CAT scan or your ultrasound report, if it's something that the urologist wanted to see you back for, I would get back.
Sure.
Okay, because he said, he goes, there's 99% chance there's never a problem, but yeah. I have to do a CAT scan. And then he did it, and he goes, you're perfectly fine, but we should check you. It's just a abnormality that you're born with.
It's
so why would I have to keep going back?
It's that tricky 1% that always gets you out of 90. Thank you, Maureen. Appreciate it. All right. And now we're going to go to Carol in Newtonville, where everybody eats figs. Okay, Carol, you're on.
Hi, I'm a first-time caller. I have chronic kidney disease as a result of loss of kidney due to cancer and the subsequent chemotherapy. The problem is I was supposed to be on a low-sodium, low-potassium diet. So that is very, very strict as far as dietary guidelines are concerned. So far I've been on amlodipine, Cardizem, and now the third blood pressure medicine is Losartan potassium. But I told the doctor I don't want to take that anymore because I can't get my diet under control, and that just affects the sodium-potassium thing. So in 8 months, I've been on three different medicines, and now I'm supposed to try a fourth. I'm getting pretty confused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So many times, and thanks for the call, so many times it can be confusing because you're getting dietary advice and you're on different medications, and medications have side effects, and it can be difficult to navigate. As it relates to diet, this can be a very challenging thing in terms of getting your sodium and potassium under control. Not knowing, you know, how advanced your chronic kidney disease is, it becomes more and more important the further you go, because the kidneys are not getting rid of so much salt and water. And if you're taking that sodium in, the sodium makes its way into your tissues and the water follows. And the next thing you know, you're swollen or you're short of breath. So in general, I try to have my patients who are on a sodium restriction restrict to about 2,000 milligrams a day.
How much is that?
So
not much.
It's not much. It's a pretty bland diet, to be honest with you. But
salt's not a great idea in any case, is it?
Right. So you know, in our culture, sodium intakes can be 10, 15,000 milligrams a day, or sometimes in one meal. So we take in so much sodium, and we have so much chronic kidney disease, so much diabetes, so much high blood pressure, so much heart disease, that there's clearly an association between what we're doing with our diets and our lifestyles and the types of diseases that they foster.
So shouldn't you be like me and just not have any salt?
Well, if everyone did, I mean, there are. It would be very difficult.
It's possible,
but
it calls for a certain amount of self-control, and then after a while, you get used to it. You really do get used to it. No question about it. I have a daughter. I duke this out with her all the time.
You do, and a lot of times, I'll talk to patients in the office, and they'll tell me after they've been very successful at restricting sodium in their diet for a long time.
Right.
It doesn't take much sodium or salt in the food before they really taste it. We have a very sensitive taste mechanism for sodium, and some people think that that's actually an evolutionary mechanism.
Right, right.
Anything? Right. So is there any go-to blood pressure medicine that after taking those previous three that you could see recommending?
Well, unfortunately, there are not an unlimited number of classes of medications. And like I said, they all do have side effects. Just to hit some of the kind of the highlights of them, the calcium channel blockers, they do tend to cause swelling. Some of them in combination with other classes like beta blockers, this is a common class for medications, can also lower your heart rate. And sometimes combinations of those medicines can cause that to be too low. Medicines like the ARBs that we talked about, or ACE inhibitors, they can be good for patients with chronic kidney disease, but in some cases, not good. ACE inhibitors can cause cough, sometimes other side effects too. So it is something that, you know, if you have chronic kidney disease and you're on four different blood pressure medicines, to have yourself a kidney specialist that can really spend the time to tailor that list specifically for you would be ideal.
Okay, thank you. All right, so now we'll go to Roberta in New Paltz. Okay, Roberta in New Paltz, you're on.
Hi, my name is Roberta, and my son, he was diagnosed with high blood pressure when he was in 11th grade. He was playing football, and they couldn't figure it out. They did a sonogram. They seen that one of his kidneys was just really small, and they said that was causing it. So they put him on lisinopril with a diuretic. He's 19 now. He just hates the effect of the medicine. So I was wondering, could he ever get that small kidney removed or just be put on a different medicine?
Well, in the past, it was actually a little bit more common where we did remove kidneys sometimes for high blood pressure. We very, very rarely do that now. There are some studies actually going on currently where they're using techniques where they ablate or destroy some of the nervous innervation of the kidneys, which may lower blood pressure in the long run. We don't know the results of those studies just yet. So what we're left with, I think, for you is to look into what medicines he's taking, and if he's getting side effects from them, maybe a different medication would be better. So I think you mentioned lisinopril and a diuretic too. So lisinopril is in a medicine class called ACE inhibitors, and it's kind of a cousin to that ARB class, and sometimes they're used interchangeably. He might have fewer side effects on those.
Wait, I wanted to hear I heard something from the caller, from Roberta, about the small kidney. Mm. Is it possible to have a small kidney? We have two, right? And a larger kidney?
Absolutely. And it's interesting how sometimes these things will kind of come back as we have more in-depth conversation.
Yeah.
But it sometimes, genetically or for other reasons, one kidney can be small, sometimes very small, sometimes not there at all.
Then it makes sense to take the small one out, doesn't it? So the big one can do its...
It seems like it might make sense, but in many cases, that small kidney is not doing anything harmful. And so if you were to kind of weigh out the risk of having surgery and going through that type of procedure versus what would happen if you left the kidney, if it's not causing any problems, any pain, any major issues, sometimes better to just leave it alone.
Thank you, Roberta. All right. Now let's go to, I see, Phyllis in Wilton. Okay, Phyllis in Wilton, you're on. Go ahead. Hi, Phyllis.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm curious about any current research, the status of it, for 3D printing of kidney organs, since there's such a shortage of transplant kidneys available.
Phyllis, I love it. I love the idea, and we're not very close to having something like that. But you never know what will come in the future.
Okay, I was hoping you would have some wonderful
prognosis
insight into new
There are some things on the horizon. One of the things that actually maybe less than 5 years out would be something implantable that might take the place of at least part of a person's dialysis regimen.
Wow. Thank you, Phyllis. Okay, we're going to take a break now, thanks to Zach the engineer, and we'll be right back.
So
Support comes from the bariatric program at Adirondack Health Saranac Lake, offering weight loss surgery and lifestyle education. Better health, better lives. AdirondackHealth.org. Villa Veritas Foundation, Cohonkson, New York, helping fight the epidemic opiate crisis both locally and throughout the country, with specialized programs, education, and support for men, women, and families. VillaVeritas.org for inquiries. New York Oncology Hematology, welcoming WAMC listeners to its 5th annual Spring to Life Conference, Saturday, May 19th. CME credit available for healthcare professionals. NewYorkOncology.com for registration. Rhinebeck Artists Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, and at 793 Broadway in Kingston, RhinebeckArt.com. And from Ellis Medicine Cardiovascular Care, working to bring modern technology and treatment options to the Capital Region, offering heart care in a community hospital setting, ellismedicine.org/heart.
And we are back with Dr. Vincent Carcillo. Dr. Carcillo, tell us about the newer advances in that you have to help people out when they have kidney disease.
Well, one of the things that we're doing a lot of in this area, and we hope to lead the way right here in Albany, in the Capital District, is with home dialysis. So when most people think of dialysis, they think of the classic, someone goes to a center three times a week for about 4 or 5 hours and get their treatments that way, which has its pros and cons, right? You don't really need to do much except to show up. But there are a ton of issues with that, right? One of them is the simple fact that finally it's 60 degrees outside, but it feels like it's been winter forever. And when the snowing outside or the roads are ice, you still have to be there. So we do a lot of home dialysis, in which in many of those patients we do dialysis through the belly, where we don't see any blood. It's just clear fluid going in and out of the person's belly, and that's done mostly at night while they're sleeping.
And Vince, on that, you have to buy the machine, right?
You actually don't need to buy anything.
Really?
Insurance covers about everything that you need for both types of dialysis, honestly.
So why wouldn't everybody do it at their house?
It's a great question. And I'll tell you this. When you poll nephrologists and you talk to kidney doctors around the country and you said, all right, well, the question to you is, if you need to do dialysis, what kind of dialysis would you do? Well, 90%, 95% or more say they would do it at home. And yet, only about 7% of our patients are doing home dialysis.
Well, you need to be trained, right?
You do.
You would have to be trained, and you would have to keep the thing clean.
Yes. Yes. And these are some of the same issues that you would have with hemodialysis. Cleanliness is important, and you do need to train. And so you do take on some of that responsibility to do that at home. But I'll tell you, I've had patients very young. I've had patients very old, in their 90s, with no partner, doing this at home. I'll tell you, in fact, I had one patient many years ago, completely blind, and he was able to do home dialysis pretty much by himself.
Wow.
One of the barriers, and when you say, why would that be? Why, if we would do dialysis at home, why wouldn't we offer that to our patients? And there are a lot of answers to that, and I think that becomes a complex question. But there, with those barriers, we've come up with a system that we call Seamless PD. And so
your practice.
That's right. That's right. And we hope to be able to do this everywhere eventually because we're so proud of what we're doing here. And so with our seamless procedure, and there are a bunch of steps, and I won't go through all of it, but we're able to really get a patient to do home dialysis almost next day. So that patient that presents late, that's in the hospital, needs to start dialysis, still will have the choice, a choice that we were not able to give them before. And I'm happy to say that about 22% of our patients are doing dialysis at home. And one of the things that it doesn't get overlooked by me, and certainly you would think would not get overlooked by our government officials, which is the cost. The cost of dialysis is so much. It's about 7% of the Medicare budget, which is about $39 billion. And so home dialysis, although it's the in my estimate, one of the best ways that you could do dialysis if you were the patient, is also so much less expensive. if we were able to get that number across the country from 7% to a modest 15 to 18%, we'd save $1 billion a year for
and
Medicare.
Yet, I know you're very proud of some of the dialysis operations that you have at Capital District Renal Physicians. Didn't you just open something in Saratoga?
We do have an office in Saratoga, and we have a beautiful new dialysis unit in Saratoga as well. And now we have great new partners in Troy, and we'll be opening a new dialysis unit in Troy just across the street from Hudson Valley Community College. These are going to be really great places for the community. And I'll bring one more up if I could, which is a program that I've been working on for years. And it's something that might get overlooked unless you see patients with dialysis needs. But I'll tell you, our patients who do peritoneal dialysis that unfortunately need rehab or need to be in a nursing home, they can't stay in the Capital District. They so frequently have to leave the area if they want to continue to do PD to over 100 miles away. And I can only imagine how stressful that is for the patient and for their family.
So define peritoneal?
Peritoneal dialysis is that home dialysis that we do through the belly.
I see.
I'm very happy to say that by mid-May, that we'll be able to admit those patients right here to rehab or nursing home at Our Lady of Mercy right here in the Capital District in Guilderland.
I see. So the nursing home then becomes the place where they're going to do this. Right?
We would treat that as the patient's home. And so the patient sometimes will be able to do their own treatments there. Sometimes the nurse would do that for them.
Well, very exciting. Let's go to D in Oneonta. D is on the phone. D, you're up.
Hi, this is Dee in Oneonta. I have a quick question. I don't know if someone asked this, but I just read recently that they're doing trials of prosthetic kidneys, which would eventually eliminate transplants, which would be wonderful for children, et cetera, et cetera. Is this true?
Well, just make a few comments on that. It's I think, one of the things that there's kind of a bridge to what we're doing in this community is nanotechnology, right? So as things get smaller, more doors open. And so they've been working on an implantable kidney for a very, very long time, decades and decades. They may actually be within a few years. Again, clinical trials are still ongoing and some yet to come. But these devices are getting smaller and smaller and may take the place of dialysis or may be able to at least lessen the burden of dialysis. And that would, in some ways, take the place of a transplant.
Thank
Marvelous.
You. Thank you, Dee. All right, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. There are two people on the line, which means that if you want to get in, now's the time to do it. Again, 1-800-348-2551. And now over to Mark in Salem. Okay, Mark.
Hello, doctors. I have a family history of high triglycerides and high cholesterol. And I have always been a person who was, from the time I was in college, I'm 66 now, who experienced frequent urination during the day, not so much at night. I am taking lisinopril, verapamil, and metoprolol for my slightly high, elevated heart rate. I'm not overweight. 6'1" and about 160 pounds. And I do try to get exercise every day. And the doctor put me years ago on Effexor for a fibromyalgia type symptom. And I found out more recently, thanks to WAMC, they had a program that can cause a problem with type 2 diabetes and also high triglycerides, and I've cut myself back to the point where I'm just about off of it. Would you comment on that, please, on the combination of antidepressants and how it affects your triglycerides and your blood sugar in general?
Well, so those medications and blood sugars, that's probably not my best area to give you advice on, but as it relates to frequent urination, we did mention earlier, if blood sugars are elevated, this can make you urinate more. But as a gentleman in your mid-60s, again, one of the things that you need to be concerned about is making sure that you have good prostate health. and getting a prostate examination. And
I have an enlarged prostate that I'm taking medication for.
Sure, sure. And this is there is very likely a relationship there.
Mark, thank you. All right, now we'll go to Nancy in Saratoga Springs. All right, Nancy, your turn.
Okay. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Nancy.
About a year ago, I developed a high potassium. The urologist says my bladder's fine. The nephrologist says my kidney's fine. And every 6 weeks I do it, unless I live on sugar, white bread, and rice, which have no potassium, it goes back up. No one can tell me why. When the whole world has low potassium, I have high potassium. Can you?
I have a feeling that I will not be able to answer this question for you. So many people have put so much work into this, but I can give you some ideas of what the doctors were looking at. You know, there are a number of things that can cause high potassium, sometimes blockages in your urinary stream, kidney stones that are blocking the passage of urine, sometimes medications. We had talked a little bit earlier about medicines like ACE inhibitors and ARBs for blood pressure can raise potassium levels.
If you're, no medications, and they don't seem to say there's a blockage.
Yep, and there are also some genetic reasons to have high potassium levels or low potassium levels. So that's one of the things that a good and kidney specialist would be looking into.
And from the political scientists, you don't eat too many bananas, do you?
Oh, I never eat bananas.
Well,
I'm left with blueberries.
And that's not the answer.
We're whiffing here.
And I've given up avocados, bananas, everything I love.
Oh, but, I'm sorry to hear that.
You know, when I drink 64 ounces of water, it's disgusting and discouraging. But by the way, is Addison's disease anything that can cause that?
Yes. So there are diseases like Addison's I won't go into at length, but diseases of your adrenal glands that can cause elevated or low potassium levels. So, yes, absolutely.
Thanks a lot. Okay, and now we are off to go to talk to John in Rock Hill, New York. Okay, John, your turn.
Well, good afternoon.
Hey.
Hi, John.
Coincidentally enough, I just turned my radio on, and I just left the dialysis center. What I'm curious about is, do you have any suggestions about how to minimize or eliminate what I call the post-dialysis slump? In other words, on the days of dialysis?
John, thanks for that question.
And mentally, mentally and physically.
Yeah.
It can beat you up a little bit.
Absolutely. I know exactly what you're talking about. And for those people who are doing dialysis or have a loved one that's doing dialysis, this is a very common thing that people experience. And there's a reason for that. When you think about your kidneys and the way they work, they are working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They never take any time off. They never take a vacation. And so when you try to replicate that, well, we can't do that 24 hours a day. So with hemodialysis, it's a punch that you get 4 hours with as much cleaning as we can do. And so unfortunately, there's a downside to that. And a lot of times people do feel washed out.
Well, that's interesting.
One way around that is to embark on this home dialysis that we do through the belly called PD. Many times we've seen patients that did have that post-dialysis slump or that washed out feeling goes away.
Why? Yeah.
Because this is a more chronic and long-lasting therapy. It's done every night instead of 3 times a week.
Really?
And so it's smoother and it's gentler on the system.
Well, that's certainly what I would do. John, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Okay. Let's see now. Let's go to Let's go to Nancy in Middletown. Okay, Nancy in Middletown, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me all right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, my question is, I think, a simple one. I had some recent blood work done. Everything was within normal limits. I'm 64. I'm on no medications except calcium and vitamin D. And everything in my metabolic panel was normal with the exception of an eGFR calculated, which was 53.3. So my doctor said that I need to go for a renal sonogram, and I take like I said, no medications except those vitamins. What could that be indicative of? And could not drinking enough water, having a high water intake, affect it?
So the short answer to your question, or at least the latter part of your question, is yes. And I'm going to try to pack a lot of this into a short amount of time because the hour is going by so quickly. But the estimated GFR, that eGFR that you see, is actually something that gets calculated based on another number that's on that panel called the serum creatinine level, which is actually something that they measure. And so the eGFR got added to that panel a number of years ago, about 10 years ago or so, and that was to help doctors find patients that had chronic kidney disease. It was kind of an early way to screen. Unfortunately, the downside of that is you pick up a lot of people whose number might be lower than 60 that really are doing just fine.
So, but the tell-all here is the creatinine. When you look at
the
that
creatinine
value.
Is what actually gets measured. So yes, I think that there's more weight on that.
So if you have bad creatinine, and I ask you this on every single show, the other one is bun. And everybody tells me, no, just bun doesn't matter. Just drink more water.
Well, they're measuring two different things, right? So the creatinine is actually a waste product of your muscle's metabolism. So, and that's why it's a good universal marker, because everyone has muscles. And so every day your muscles are active. More of this stuff, which is very small, like a salt called creatinine, comes out, circulates around till it gets the kidneys, and kidneys flush it out. So you should be in balance. Every day you make more. Every day you get rid of more, your level should stay the same, that number around one. If that number's rising over time, indirectly, in a simple way, it tells us, hey, kidneys aren't clearing as much as they should, and so there may be a problem.
Okay, we're going to take another call, but it's going to be risky because it's got to be short. Mm-hmm. Nicole, you're on, and it's Nicole and Shokin, and it's got to be a fast one. Go ahead.
Well, I'm sorry, it's going to supposed to take longer, but anyways, my husband lost his left kidney at the age of 6 in refugee camp Germany. So for all these years, he was fine, and suddenly, I don't remember exactly when he was voiding, he started to bleed. So we went to the urologist, and he said, you pass a stone. We never saw a stone. So back in September 15, it's 12 powders, okay? In September 15, he started again to bleed, so again to the urologist, and again he said, you passed a stone. Frederick having only one kidney and diabetes, so we went for a biopsy in December 15. We found out that he had cancer. In January, we went to New York City for surgery. They could not do anything. So again, just to tell others that sometimes we are told something and it's not exactly what it is. So my husband eventually died November 1st, 16. So I'm a little bit sorry because when we learn that he had cancer, he was told he was taking metformin, and right away the primary doctor went to talk to the diabetic doctor, and right away they stopped metformin. So it's such a series of strange things. So I like people to be aware what they need to do, what they should do, not do. Okay.
All right. That's very good, Nicole. Now, doctor, you want to answer that?
Well, I'm so sorry to hear about your husband, and I think that one of the take homes from me from what you said is that from our physician end we need to be vigilant about finding diagnosis, especially the most serious diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nicole, I'm so sorry we can't spend any more time. I want to thank those who are left on the line. They are Ben from Richfield Springs, Susie from Western Massachusetts, Nalo from Poughkeepsie, and Bill from East Greenbush. I'm so sorry we couldn't take your calls, but we're out of time. And I want to thank everyone who did call in. I'd also like to thank our very good friend, Dr. Vincent Carcillo, for joining us today. Underwrite support for the Vox Pop comes from WMC Heart and Vascular Institute with new diagnostic cardiology suites at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospitals, members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, WMCHealth.org. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.